Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, April 10th, 2023. To begin with, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded. And as usual, we will place the meeting audio on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone joining through the video conference, you can click on the speaker mute and unmute button, and that will do the trick of muting or unmuting you. But if you would like to make any comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by going under reactions and clicking on the raise hand icon. Everyone should be on mute at this point. I would request for everyone to please stay on mute unless speaking. This helps eliminate any external noise. So in advance, thank you. As you know that we do have American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, when speaking, please state your name and then your comments. It helps the interpreters in doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is. Chair Calabia, at this point, I can go ahead and read the meeting agenda and then take the roll call of the AAC members.
Please do, yes.
Great. I would share my screen while I read the agenda. So if you would just give me one quick moment so that the agenda is visible on my screen. And I believe my screen is to everyone who can see, right?
Yes, I can see it.
Great. Thank you for the confirmation. So after I finish reading the agenda, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. We do have Lynn Bowersox. She would be discussing and sharing information about the 8000 Railcard Series Open Gangway Design regarding customer engagement plan. At 5 p.m., we will have a team from Better Bus Network Redesign. They will also talk about public engagement. And the team includes William Jones, Melissa Kim, and Alana McKeeman, but Alana would be, there would be another team member instead of Alana. At 5:45, we will take any public comments and the meeting is scheduled to be adjourned at 6 p.m. I would stop sharing my screen now. When we go through the roll call, I would be calling out AAC members' names. Please confirm your presence. Azhar Atura. Darnese Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. I believe I saw Vanessa on the meeting. Rico Dancy. I believe Rico is also connected. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher. Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangren.
Present.
Thank you. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsom.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Doris Ray.
Present.
Thank you. Denise Rush. I thought I saw Ms. Rush. Paul Semaphore. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonow. Philip Weintraub.
Ms. Rush is here. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rush. All right, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. If any of the members join later, I will be checking the screen and I will mark them present accordingly. At this time, Chair Calabia, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes, in terms of approving the agenda, I suggest that we forego anything until Lynn has had a chance to speak, since she has constraints on her time, and also delay the review of the minutes. Hearing no objections to the agenda and the recommendation I just made, the agenda is approved. Lynn, it's yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I so appreciate you and the accommodation on the agenda. First, let me just introduce myself. My name is Lynn Bowersox. I'm the head of rail transformation for WMATA, but I'm joined today by my very impressive colleagues, Shushil Ramneras, who is our chief mechanical officer, Dave Souter, his deputy, and Nahom from the 8K project team. All are on the call listening to understand and hear directly the feedback that you give me today. So I want to start by saying that we really did listen last month. We started a lot of listening with customers, including this group, the full AAC, the RAC. We were out in stations getting reactions from customers at Largo, at Minnesota Avenue, and at Ballston. We've reached out to subject matter experts for bicycle and pedestrian friendly spaces, and have reached out now to WABA, the Bicyclists Association, to get more input. And ultimately, the next step is that we will be doing a survey, a very, very targeted survey that will include people who are not frequent riders of the system, as well as people who are, to be as inclusive as possible. And today, what we want to do is share some revised renderings with you that we hope have included some of the suggestions that you've made to us, and get your further feedback on this so that ultimately the final design reflects as much input as possible. Again, where we can within the contract and the engineering limitations of rolling stock. But here we go. So Anu is my assistant today for sharing. Anu, I thank you. You all will remember that at the last AAC meeting, we went through a revised seating diagram. And what's important to remember about this is that it flips what your experience is today on the 7000 series. So today on the 7000 series, there are about 2/3 back and front seating and 1/3 bench seating along the side of the car. The new 8000 series cars, in order to accommodate more aisles, wheelchairs, luggage, strollers, bikes, and standees, more passengers, more capacity overall. We showed you the A and B diagrams for the married pair cars, which flip it and again have about 1/3 front and back seating and 2/3 bench seating. So it's inverted from the 7Ks. Again, giving you a much significant aisle width expansion and increasing the capacity of the cars from about 110 total seating and standing to about 130. Okay, Anu, if you can go to the first rendering, please. That's the illustration. It'll come up, I'm sure. Keep going. You have the... There we go. Okay, so this is the first illustration, and you can see there, this is the old one that had the doorway between the cars, and hopefully in the next one you're going to see the new one without the doorway. Keep going. Sorry, these are not in the best order. Ah, there we go. So there is the open gangway style that we are considering, and it shows you a couple of things. It shows you that you can move through the cars without being exposed to the exterior. It shows you some of the bench seating, and it shows you some of the wall designs that would try to project that you're in the nation's capital and make this car stand out from a car you might find anywhere else in the world. If you can go backwards from Hiranu, here you see a bike placed at the one location where bicycles, strollers, and luggage are encouraged. And there's placement of decals on the floor that indicate that separately from the wheelchair access point. Again, you see the bench style seating. And if you can go back one more anew. Thank you. Here we see the wheelchair decal placement on the floor with, and I'm sorry, a lot of these are very quick figures that Hitachi uses over and over. It's not always the best translation from Japan, but this is a style seating that you would see on the 8000 series adjacent to the wheelchair space. And if you can go back one more anew. And here you see one of the displays. It looks like a giant iPhone that tells you what the station ahead is. And again, you see that new seating configuration with the wider aisles. And as you look back the floor, which by the way, heated floors to spread the heat more evenly throughout the car in the winter, you see the blue decals on the floor indicating the wheelchair placement and then the bike placement. And you see that new stanchion in the middle that's a handhold for people who are in sort of the middle of the car but need a place to hold onto and can't reach the bar above. Again, that was a customer suggestion that had been included here. Is there one more anew? And there we are back to the older one with the door in it. So with that, anew can go to any of those that you'd like to see, but I'd love to stop talking and get your input at this time. Anybody have things that they like here, they want to comment on, they see that they didn't see last time, or anything of concern? Mr. Chair, would you like to call on people?
Lynn, I'll start off. This is Tino, the chair of the subcommittee.
Thank you.
You've done a number of surveys. In view of the rising crime rates in the area and even in the Umata property, as reported just yesterday in the Post, the Post mentions that additional policing will be provided by neighboring jurisdictions and also private security. In light of that, have you included in your surveys any police officers or people associated with police? And the follow-up question to that would be, would they more easily be able to respond to police emergencies or other kinds of emergencies if the open gangways train was fully open throughout the train and not just in married couplets? Have you been to talk to the police?
So, Mr. Chair, we talked to both command staff and patrol officers, and they like these married pair configurations because they do have a better line of sight through the cars when they're trying to respond through two cars. But they do like that, at least in the base order, we would just get two cars joined together and would see how that works first before going to more, because they like the notion that it does limit whatever's going on in those two cars to those two cars. So there's still a doorway that separates the rest of the next two cars, if you will, the rest of the train. There's a door every two cars into the next of the train. So they think that this is a great configuration. They like the wider aisles a lot for policing purposes. And so far the feedback's been pretty positive.
As you know, I've done a lot of homework and I have read, I think that Toronto began with married pairs, but they eventually changed. So perhaps you should check with them on why they thought the full railway opening would be throughout the train.
Right. And so I would just say to that, Mr. Chairman, we have talked to Toronto pretty extensively in New York and Atlanta, as a matter of fact. And, you know, going forward, there's a number of considerations, not just building the cars, but also how they operate and how we maintain them in our facilities. And so we'd have to have in our plan some modifications to our facilities to accommodate trains that have more than a married pair connection. And so that's something long range we are certainly looking at and want to continue to consider, but having this as a starting point would be a great opportunity for us to have a learning curve.
Thank you, Lynn. My name is Tino, by the way. I just go by Tino.
Thank you, Tino.
Others should have a chance to speak, but towards the end, I would like to address the question of stanchions. I think there's a way of dealing with stanchions that would not get in the way of wheelchairs trying to move around them. Anu, who has their hand?
Sure, this is Anu. So we do have five members who have their hands up in this order. Thomas Mangrum, Philippa Mazzell, Steve Caffin, Sandy Newzo, and Doris Ray. I will start the timer for 3 minutes when each individual starts speaking, only to ensure that everyone gets an opportunity, because we do have some two very important topics today. So Thomas, when you start speaking, I will begin the 3 minute timer.
Okay. Yes, this is Thomas. I wanna where you have the wheelchair seating for the people in wheelchairs. That picture that you showed was pretty small space for wheelchairs. What have you? Most people I know have larger wheelchairs than that to fit in that space. So I want to have a bigger wheelchair space for those that use wheelchairs like myself. And also with the open gangway, my concern is this: when the train is turning and somebody's visually impaired walking to the gangway, they might have their hands on the wall or what have you. So have y'all made it so people's hands won't get caught in the wall, or a senior that might need to brace their hand on the wall as they're going to the gangway or what have you, because I don't want somebody's hands, or mine for that matter, to get caught as I'm going to the gangway.
Thomas, thank you so much for those comments. We'll look at what's standard and what's available for those handicap spaces, for the wheelchair decal. I know that that has, that there's different size chairs, and I appreciate you on that. I don't know if Shishil or Dave want to comment on the pinch points. I know this has come up in other conversations, and they have been looking hard at the pinch points to make sure that we don't have a hand hold risk there.
Yeah, so this is Shishil, and Dave Souter, please chime in as needed. That is a subject of discussion that came up during the visits to New York City Transit on their R211. The team that's traveling there will certainly have an opportunity to witness that, as well as the possible fixes that they're introducing. It is a subject that we're considering in the design reviews, and it's a balance between having sufficient handholds to ensure safety during the operation of the train, but not having handholds in areas where the bath points. So thank you for a very good point, but it is something that we are considering in the design process. Dave Souter, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I think that's a good summary, Shishil. I also wanted to mention, though, that the fabric is that the open gangway is constructed of is a silicone based fabric, so it is relatively soft. So the ribs are not hard.
Next.
Okay, I think I was next. This is Philippa. Well, one, hello, everyone. And thank you, Lynn and company, for coming. One thing I wanted to immediately comment on that jumped out at me while I was watching, looking at the photographs, is that I love that the station ahead sign was at eye level. But I'm curious, what is right in front of that? We see the picture of the, I guess, the board with the station ahead sign on it, but I can't tell, is there a place to stand in order to see that sign, or are there seats right there, or a wheelchair right there, or just what's there that would may limit access to get close to that sign or enable access?
Sure. So I think the way it's positioned, it's just inside the door. It is near where priority seating would normally be.
Okay.
And Shushil, I want you to confirm this for me, but I believe we imagine these are two-sided, right?
Yes, they are two-sided.
Thanks,
yes.
Dave. Okay. So the two-sided means that you'll be able to see them if you're standing near or at the doorway, or if you're back in the seats, or if you're standing in the aisle. And as you can see, they're positioned throughout the length of the car. Right. So there's also what you can see in this rendering is there's a lot of digital signage in this car that's not in the 7Ks in the balance area over the windows. And so there's more digital displays going back the car than what you're used to in the 7Ks today.
Well, I want to thank you for that, because I can't see the station ahead signs now as they now exist in the train car, but I believe I'd be able to see this one.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next would be Steve. Steve, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. To keep within the time frame, Lynn, perhaps let me put out my questions, and then you can handle them as you wish, all right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sure. First thing relates to the seating. The shape of the seats is going to be a problem. I'd like for you to take a further look at it. I noticed it last time, and I was deficient in sending on you the comment. Whenever we try to create a curve in a seat that it doesn't work, because people come in all shapes and sizes. There's another picture where you have a woman sitting on one of the seats, and she's not leaning back, she's sitting upright. If she were to lean back, she'd be looking like she's sliding. We have that situation in one of the buses, a design that came out, I think, 5 or 6 years ago, and it's extremely uncomfortable. And it's also more difficult to get up. So Lynn, would you look at that? And then I'm going to move on, because I only have 3 minutes, okay? The second thing is, it's a question. Why the narrow gangway? There are other, we've seen wider gangways on other pictures we have of different metro systems. The third, the hanging straps idea is a great idea. Perhaps that can go over the wheelchair area, because it's very difficult for riders to hang on to that horizontal bar that sits there, which is of course required. But if that space is empty, you want to have something that the riders can hold on to, and that will be strap hangers. The fourth thing is, are you planning to have all gangway at this point, or are you still talking about every second car? And is there going to be, I call it a safe car. It's not really a safe car. It's a car which isn't gangway, that people who feel more comfortable in that, particularly in off hours, can sit. And that's a question more than a comment. Are we going to have an operator's cab in every car, or is that just the picture? Because that takes up a lot of space, and it cuts down the opportunity for a wider gangway. And, you know, the wider the gangway, the smaller the gap. And, you know, Lynn, the AAC started this process by looking at ways the gap could be minimized because of the extreme safety hazard. And one way is to have the widest possible gateway. Are we planning to have real maps at the doors? I know I rely upon maps, and once the tourists come back, they want it to. Are the doors going to be wider? I couldn't really tell from the diagram. And I thank you for this list, but I have 3 minutes. So. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Sure. So I don't want to eat up the group's time by answering everything. I'd rather hear everybody's questions. So I feel like my responses are taking too long. But let me do this, Steve. We will respond to some of them. We are considering married pairs for open gangways. So it would be two that are together, then two that are together, then two that are together. Does that make sense? That's the configuration that we are considering at this time. There do need to be operator cabs in every married pair because of operating conditions on a two-track system and the way Metro is designed. We would have far less trains to put out for service if we didn't have the operator cabs. And then I also want to say that the gangway needs to be as wide as it is because there's cabinets with equipment that are sort of shrouding it. And so the engineers need space for, you know, the guts of the train's passenger communications and visual displays and signal systems and other things. And those equipment cabinets contain some of the guts of the train. But let me move on from there. Things like maps, which will be here actually in the car, we're going to get to next month when we talk about more of the finishes inside the trains. We're trying to start with and conclude what we need to do on the structural side right now.
Perhaps the most important comment, one sentence, perhaps the most important comment are the seats. You're creating a seat that may fit some people but won't fit others. Would you please take a look at that curve that the seats currently have?
Thank you. We will. We'll look at that lumbar support. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sandy, you are next, so go ahead.
Hi, this is Sandy. I like Philippa Mazzell, really like the mock-up of the digital next station signs by the door. I think that's going to be very helpful, larger, very accessible for people who need to get up close to read it. I do like the married pairs concept of open gangways as opposed to the entire train open, but I'm still concerned about the intercar barrier between one married pair and the next married pair. What will it look like on the outside of the train? Will it be the same as the intercar barrier within the married pair? And I hope we can see a mock-up of that sometime soon.
Thank you. I know that Dave commented on that at our last meeting, and when we have that for you, we'll get back to you on it.
Thank you.
Next.
Thank you. Doris Ray would be next, and after that, Darnies. So Doris, go ahead.
Hi. So I associate myself with Sandy's questions and particularly about the outside and what it's going to look like, and also with Mr. Mangrum, particularly about injuries that might be sustained given the design. But my major question is R2. One is I'm kind of confused, and this may be because I'm at the disadvantage of not having seen the pictures, but I'm at the disadvantage, even though I'm at that disadvantage. My question is, I thought the whole purpose of the gangways was to get from one train to another, and that its whole purpose may be a little bit different from what I know is the design of the articulated buses, and yet This sounds very much like the articulated buses, which is another reason I'm also concerned about any seats that are in there, like Steve has mentioned. So I'm wondering why this isn't a design where people are just walking through, and rather than having seats and all kinds of paraphernalia in there, or rolling through.
Yeah, and, dear, so
and
I
the second, and then my second question is, can you tell me something about the ADA requirements, if there are any, on the design of a gangway and gangway cars, or is that something that's going to come about as an afterthought at some point? Because I am concerned about things like navigation, people in wheelchairs having enough sufficient room to pass each other or not, or whether it's being designed not with that thought in mind, and what the actual width of this corridor from one train to another is going to be, and things that are related to that, and why are we having digital displays in what's supposed to be a gangway passage to get from one train to another.
So Doris, allow me to better describe the gangway. It is not a seating area, and there's no digital display in that area. It is a passageway between cars. And so—
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you, so—
Sure, if I speak up, is this a little bit better?
Yeah, you need to talk directly. I have a hearing impairment, so you need to talk directly into the mic.
Okay, I apologize if this is better. I hope this is better. But the gangway is a passageway. It is joining the two cars, and it is a pass-through. It is not a seating area, and it does not have a digital display in it. So I hope that's a better explanation of the rendering itself. Does that help at all?
Well, why are we even talking then about seating and such?
Because throughout the rest of the car, the seating configuration is different than the experience on the 7K.
So you're talking the inside of the train.
That's right. So there are two different things, right? One is the gangway.
It changes.
And one is the seating.
It changes the seats and everything else that's in that area where the train opens up for the gangway.
That's right. We are talking about structural changes that are different than the 7Ks. One is the gangway. One is the seating configuration. Two different things. Sorry for that confusion.
Okay. Next. And so what about ADA standards? Have they already been created by the access board, and are they already approved as standards or minimum, or are they still minimum guidelines? What's the deal there?
Lynn, would you like me to address that?
Thank you, Carol.
Sure. This is Carol Lopez, Doris. The ADA standards have, there are standards for railcar vehicles, and these vehicles, when they are designing it, they will be compliant for ADA standards. There's no specific ADA standard for gangway, open gangway cars. There are requirements for door openings, there are requirements for many features, but there's not a specific one for open gangway cars.
Okay, so that is something that maybe will come in the future? We're doing something that's...
From my experience with working with Metro, anytime we do something here in Washington, D.C., somehow it becomes a standard. So we make sure we do the right thing.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not saying you aren't. I'm just curious whether there are standards that can help with some of the things that we've been talking about here.
Let me add.
So that we could say the minimum standard is blah, blah, blah. That's all.
Let me add that when we complete the AAC Handbook for Railcar Design will incorporate the latest and the suggestions made during this process. And hopefully that can be useful to other cities which begin to plan for open gangway trains. So whether
it's not a legal standard, Tina.
No, but it'll be helpful to other people who deal with this question, including the kinds of answers that you're looking for. Among other things, for example, in our AAC Handbook for Railcar Design, there are hanging straps from the ceiling bars. They don't appear in the picture we're looking at, but we have recommended that already. Next.
Oh, but that's the last thing I want to say that I did forget to say, which is, as far as I'm concerned, as a person with a vision impairment and also just a person of my height and such, I can't stand hanging straps. I don't feel I'm safe in them. You know, using them instead of some kind of metal stanchion or whatever. And the second thing is that they're prone to hit you in the face when you're walking down the aisle, like in a bus, for example. So
I've shown you Toronto's open gangways, and their hanging handholds don't swing all the way down. They're slightly raised, and then you pull them down. Next question.
Okay, this is Anu. Next would be Darnese. Darnese, when you start speaking, I will turn on the timer at that point.
Thank you.
Sure.
I have some of the same concerns that Thomas does. I have two questions. First of all, isn't the seating for passengers and wheelchairs already dictated by the access board by ADA compliance? And then the second question I have is, I agree with Thomas that it should be something near the door, in front of the seats, as you for a person to hold on. I don't know if that would be that coming from the ceiling or whatever, but it seems like quite a bit of space, and a person that doesn't have good balance may fall, even though you say the floor is treated with silicone and all, but. I know in the 7,000 train, I fell over before in a chair because the train was the train was okay, but it was going through the tunnel and the tunnel had bumps, you know, it jerked and it was enough to make me fall. And I was actually holding on to bars near the seats in my wheelchair and I still fell over. So it has to be something near the door and perhaps in the gangway itself so that a person can actually hold on to keep their balance. And then the other thing is, I agree that something should be done about the lumbar seats because I don't think that they will serve the majority of people riding. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments.
Chair Calabia, this is Anu. That concludes comments from the AAC members. I'm not sure if you were going to take any comments from the members of the public.
Well, just a second. With regards to Darnese's question, in the picture that is still on the screen, there seems to be a handhold right next to the young man in the wheelchair. Am I right, Lynn?
Yes, that is what's pictured there. Whether or not that's sufficient, I mean, what her description of her experience was that she was holding on to the bar and still had a bumpy enough ride that she fell forward in the chair. Not sure exactly what the remedies might be for that, but we'll look into it. We do work closely with Carol to make sure that we're meeting or exceeding any ADA standards that are out there. But as she said, there's standards for the interior of the rail car, not so much the passageway, but we'll go back and look at that wheelchair space and make sure that that is fully compliant. And that, frankly, if there's anything better that we can do based on best practices in other places, then we'll look at that as well.
Thank you. I would like to go back to the question of stanchions, especially the stanchions that in, I think, an original design or seen elsewhere, they were at the center of the door. They don't seem to be at the center of the doors in these renderings.
And now, can you go back to the one with the center stanchion? I'll show you there. I don't know if you can blow it up at all. So structurally, this is positioned in the center of the car near a doorway, but Dave, can or Sheil, can you speak to exactly what you did there with that center aisle stanchion, the handhold? There you go, Anu, that's it. Thank you.
Oh, yes, it is expanded.
So that stanchion is positioned exactly in the center of the door pocket in the center of the car, right between the two opposite wheelchair spaces.
One of the concerns that we expressed last time is that the bottom of that kind of stanchion could get in the way of wheelchairs that are maneuvering into place or moving out. My suggestion would be, and Steve this afternoon sent us a photo of the open gangway trains in Qatar, and they had a very elaborate stanchion that was anchored, I think, in more than one place on the ceiling. And if so, it would be stronger than only anchored in one place as it is in the photo we're looking at. My suggestion would be to have designers figure out how you might cut in half or shorten the stanchion so that there's not the pole that sticks down to the ground and part of the stanchion is also low and possibly in the way of wheelchair riders. I've never seen this suggestion before, but it seems to be a design possibility and an engineering possibility if it's anchored well from the ceiling and only half the height or maybe less than half the height of the stanchion we see in the picture. Could I get a comment from a designer on this?
Yeah, we'll take it back. We have Sushil and Dave and the team, some are engineers, but we will go back and ask the designers for that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Tino, I'm sorry, can I just say one little thing? People who are blind who use a cane tend to find things in the cars that are with their cane. And if you remove the bottom, they may run into this thing that's hanging from the ceiling.
That's
it. Particularly since it's centered with the door. So we have to be very careful about balancing all of those things.
Sure.
Chair, this is Zanu.
Yes.
Steve raised his hand. Steve, go ahead.
Okay, very good. Lynn, could you please go to the picture of the young man in the wheelchair that you had up just a moment ago?
Sure, Anu, if you can go back.
Yeah, okay, thank you. There's danger there. This is, that bar, first, is impossible for anyone to hold on to if there's no one in that space. Because it's a difficult bar, and what happens is people wind up leaning on it, and so it takes up even more space than a seat. If you look at that, you see there's really nothing that anyone can hold on to, and I'm afraid that first the young man is in danger mode if we pull into a station like Metro Center and those doors open when we're back to more normal situations and a rush hour. And it's also similar to the situation we had on a similarly configured series where there was nothing to hold on to and people would be bouncing up against each other who were standing up. You know, I'm not an engineer. I don't know the solution, but can you see the issue, Lynn, that might exist?
I do. And I would just point out, I think that the bar goes as a frame. It's in sort of a U shape that goes up the sides there with the intention of giving people more places to hold on. And so we can take that back and look at it again, you know, see what's possible. But I do take your point. Yeah.
By the way, there was a question about how wide the doors are. And in this photograph, it appears that the doors are narrower than some open gangways that I've seen. Isn't it going to be wider? I know that New York's is going to be much wider than in their current series.
So I'll let my colleagues speak to the door placements and widths because it is different for every system. It depends on your platform lengths and some other considerations.
Hello. So this is Naham Devasai, the 8K project manager. Just to chime in, if we're talking about the passenger doors to exit on and off the train, they are the same width as the 7K cars, and also they are in the same location as the 7K cars. The gangway itself is unrelated to the door design. The gangway passageway obviously will be maximized to the maximum potential that the design would allow. So I don't know if those two questions were related or not.
Well, the other open gangways have wider doors. And part of the reason is it allows for entering riders or exiting riders to get out faster and shorten the dwell time.
Yeah, again, the door placement is very much aligned with having certain platform lengths and certain platform configurations, and also preserving our future ability should we ever decide to have platform screen doors, which would be another safety, a layer of safety in our system if we go to that at some point. So having the doors be symmetrical with what we have in the 7Ks allows for some fleet standardization that's actually helpful to not precluding other improvements going forward.
Are you serious about the platform gates such as are at Dulles? That would be so expensive to put into how many stations do we have? Hundreds, right?
Yeah, so we have 97 at this time. But yeah, there's serious consideration of that in the future, subject to funding availability.
Well, that'd be great, but I don't know if with dwindling resources, we'll be able to fund it. Well, thank you. Any other?
Chair Fabio, this is Zenu. Doris raised her hand up again. Doris, go ahead.
Can I go ahead?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yes, okay. I just wanted to reiterate that in this design, we should be very careful about the protruding objects standard in the ADA, both things that are too low, below the detectability of a cane, but also protruding from above. So I just wanted to note that because we've got all kinds of grab bars and various things that are involved in the design here.
Thank you.
Doris, that we get mansions, are you?
Yeah. The other thing that I'm thinking of here is since these are going to be paired cars, I'm wondering, you know, what the crash worthiness of of the gangways are. Thinking about the crash up on the Red Line, you know, in 2011 and how the train collapsed, the first two trains collapsed, I think, together or something. And then the other thing that I'm thinking of is, you know, if they're paired cars, does that mean that if there were a crash like that, you could not escape to the next set of cars? You know what I'm saying? You couldn't go back any further than one car is what I think I'm hearing.
Let me start that answer, and then I'm going to pass it over to Shushil, who is an engineer and who is much more expert on crash energy management than I am, okay? But one of the things to keep in mind is that these new generation rail cars will replace 2000 and 3000 series. So already the crash worthiness of these trains will be greater than trains that are in service today. So the technology, the engineering and the design just keeps getting better. 7Ks are better than 6s, and 8Ks will benefit from the crash worthiness improvements that we have in the 7Ks. So we are generations of cars away from Fort Totten in 2009. And so American standards are very, very robust compared to the rest of the world. And we are meeting or exceeding all of those standards. That said, Shushil's been looking at open gangway design and the crash energy management design changes that go with open gangway. So I'll let him speak to that.
Yeah, thank you, Lynn. So regarding the crashworthiness of the car, there are very well-defined standards in the United States for exploring the change to open gangway. We are reviewing those standards and ensuring that we are incorporating an improvement, as you said, to the 7K cars, and there isn't any negative impact to the vehicle performance, specifically regarding crashworthiness, as a result of the change to open gangways.
Shushil, what's your last name?
Ramirez.
How do you spell it, please?
Sure, it's R-A-M.
R-A-M?
Like Mike. R-A-M, like Mike. N,
yep.
Like November. E-R-E-S.
E-R-E-S. Thank you, Shushil. I'll be sure to include you in any future emails regarding design. Philippa?
Hi, this will just take 10 seconds. I just wanted to let you guys know, just from a PR standpoint, I've spoken with a lot of people, just asking them how they felt about the Metro and so forth. These are people I know, the new configuration. And a lot of them have the concept that the entire length of the train is going to be wide open. And I had to tell them that's not the case. It's only the two cars that will sort of be open to each other. So that might be something you want to address and whenever you're advertising your new cars or whatever. And I just wanted to add that I like the idea of the DC decorations in the cars. That's it.
Are there any public commentators who want to ask questions? Anu?
Chair Calabria, we have one member of the public with her hand up, Janice Samuel. Janice, go ahead. When you start speaking, I will turn the timer on at that point.
Thank you. I'd like to thank everyone for the pictorial renditions. My question is, will there be a 3D to scale model of the cars that we can visit and see, touch, feel, ride to make better comments and suggestions on the feasibility of the new construct? It's great hearing descriptions and these photographs, but there's nothing like being in the space and feeling it. I also wanted to make the comment about the overhead straps. Yes, it's something to hold on to, but it really isn't stable. You know, when the cars start jerking and banking left and right, you know, it's really not stable. You're leaning left, and especially if you have no vision and you can't see, it's very disorienting. And I would also agree with the comment about the poles having to go to the floor, because blind people, we are feeling the floor to orient, and we need to know that that pole is there. And understanding that these new cars, the purpose is to be able to transport more people, because the overall capacity would be greater, even though there are fewer seats. To me, it seems less accessible to the visually impaired community, because if you consider the average blind person may have a cane, maybe a bag, and blind people aren't moving around in the cars a lot. So I think many of them would prefer to just come in, find a seat and sit down. Now I have a cane, I got a bag, I got to find something to hold on to. It's a lot, you know, and this could overall push this community from using the Metro. And I'm looking at the photograph of the person in the wheelchair. So they've come in the door and they've parked themselves parallel to the car. Now you have to consider, if the car is full of people now in this condition, this person has to turn their wheelchair around 180 degrees and go back out the door that's behind him, or maybe at minimum 45 degrees if the door across has opened. And what I would think, and someone who uses a wheelchair should, you know, make a comment on, usually when people come in with a wheelchair, they're not riding perpendicular to the parallel to the train. They're riding perpendicular so they can get in and out as fast as possible and be less cumbersome to the people around them. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. And I do want to answer the question about the 3D models if I can. So The next steps of public engagement include a trip to New York City next week, where some of us, including I think 7 members of the Accessibility Advisory Committee, will be going up just to experience. There are 211 open gangway cars because it's the closest thing we have in the United States, and they're not out in passenger service yet. They're letting us come into the rail yard and look at them. And in fact, they are constructing a special ramp for us to make it wheelchair accessible in the yard, so that we can have somebody who does use a wheelchair go with us next week to do that. The next thing will be the survey, which I mentioned. In addition to that, next month, we'll be standing up pop-up displays where you'll be able to see samples and renderings and other finishes for the interior of the car to get more of a look and feel. And then months from now, we will have what is called a soft mock-up, which is the spatially to scale look and feel of the car, which you will be able to get access to, and you'll give us your input on that. And then ultimately there's a hard mock-up, and that's sort of a much more finished product that lets you see what the end result's gonna look like. And then we get pilot cars, and that's the first demonstration car. So that's the sort of schedule of things that will roll out that you'll be able to see and give input to. But at some point in the next couple of months, and that's why we started with structural, we're getting structural input because we have to make certain final design decisions on structural very, very soon. And then some of the interior finishes, the touching and feeling and the bar placement and so forth, that comes second in a second phase later this spring. And then we have something called design freeze, where there are no more changes provided to the manufacturer. So that's why we're getting all this input now, so that we can do as much as possible to be as inclusive as possible for all the customers who are going to need to use this equipment in the next decades to come. Over the next couple of months. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yes. Well, it is almost 5 o'clock, so we're able to be on time for Lynn's next meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to the designers and engineers who are with you. It is 5 o'clock, anew. The next on the agenda.
I'm sorry, this is Thomas. I don't think anybody contacted me and let me know where I should contact people for the transportation, going to New York and whatnot, and where not Metrobus is going to pick me up from my home.
Thomas,
so I don't have no information yet.
Thomas, you should receive an email from me early morning tomorrow.
You
from
know
the
what?
Time we received the confirmations from everyone, and we had to make some communications and arrangements, and so we will be contacting you tomorrow. Okay. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you all so very much. We really do appreciate the very thoughtful comments and questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
Chair Kalabi, this is Anu. Now we have the Better Bus Network Redesign team, and they are connected.
Okay. By the way, the Better Bus Redesign Network is meeting tomorrow morning as well.
So
who is on board?
So we have Finn Wickland. Hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly. We have Melissa Kim. And Melissa, am I missing anyone?
No, it's just the two of us, because William is going to be leading the meeting next month.
Great. Okay. So, and you should be able to share your screen as needed.
Wonderful. Thank
both
you.
Of you. Sure.
All right. I think, Finn, we're not able to hear you. I don't.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yes. Wonderful.
Excellent. Hi, everyone. This is Finn Vigeland from the Better Bus Project team. And I'm excited to talk with you a little bit about the redesign of the bus network. But I'm going to kick it over to Melissa to start off the presentation, and I'll jump back in a few slides.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Melissa Kim. I'm in Metro's Office of Planning, and I'm Deputy Project Manager for the Bus Network Redesign Project that we'll be talking about the engagement plan for today. So thank you so much for having us today. We're excited to be here and to hear from all of you. Today, we're gonna start by giving a brief project update. I believe the last time that we came to this group was quite a long time ago. So we'll give you a brief status update. And then a bulk of what we'll be talking about today is Finn's gonna be taking over to talk through our engagement plan and how we're planning to engage public stakeholders in this next phase of the project. We'll then get into some next steps and then open it up for a discussion and questions. All right, so yes, where we are in the project. We kicked the project off in the summer of last year, and we're about halfway through the project at this point. We're aiming to have draft bus networks finalized by the end of this coming year. And we're here today because we're about to start our next phase of public and stakeholder engagement, where we're going to be bringing out a draft bus network to the public. And we're excited to dig into those with you and the public and other stakeholders in the coming months. We'll at that point get your input on where service should be going, on frequency and span. And after we get all of your comments, we anticipate hearing a lot from all of you. We'll take all of this into consideration and update the visionary network. And then we'll bring it back out to you and the public sometime in the fall for another round of comments. So this is really our first time that we're taking out this network into the public, and we'll be back out at one more point during the course of this project. Next slide. So what will the visionary bus network deliver? What we really heard in our first round of outreach, we did our first round of outreach in October and November of last year. What we heard again and again was that the bus needs to go where and when people are traveling. So that's really this regional connectivity piece, that we're actually connecting when and where people want to go. We also really looked when designing this network to focus on frequent and reliable service. So really getting at that quality customer and operator experience. And then finally, we know that transportation provides access to opportunity and to move up the economic ladder. So making sure that the bus is playing its part in addressing inequities to provide that access to opportunity. So ultimately, that's what we're hoping to accomplish with the Visionary Network, and ultimately also to transport more customers, create safer streets, and improve air quality. But we've got to do those basic things right on this slide to make sure we're getting there. Next slide. All right, so we're here today really as a precursor. We're going to the board on this Friday. So you're getting a little bit of a preview of part of that. And then after the board presentation, that's really kicking off our public engagement that's gonna start mid-April. And after that, we're gonna come back to you in May, and we'll get into a lot more details about the Visionary Bus Network. So we'll get into things like, how did we approach building the network that we're taking out to the public? What are the ways that the network increases access to bus service at various times of day and days of week? We'll also give a little bit more insight into the ways that this new Visionary Network provides access to high frequency service to more people at more times of day. We'll get into how much time customers will save and how residents in the region's equity focused communities will benefit from the new network. And then another key piece we'll get into is how the service will take advantage of the dedicated lanes in the region that that our partners have really spent time and resources investing in to build a more reliable network. So we're really looking forward to that conversation in May with you all. And as I mentioned before, my colleague, William Jones, who was leading the service design for this, will be back for that conversation. But the purpose of today's meeting really is to talk about our upcoming planned engagement efforts for this round of engagement. So now I'm going to turn it over to Finn from the project team, who's really helping to lead this engagement effort. And he's gonna get into a lot more details about what we have coming up starting in a little over a week.
Great, thanks so much. It's so great to be here again. As I said at the start, my name is Finn Vigeland, and I've had the privilege to be on both the service planning and the engagement sides of this team. So I'm really excited to begin to share this new bus network with all of you and with the public and stakeholders beginning next week. So to begin, I'll start with just a listing of the goals that we have for these engagement efforts for this phase two of the project. The first goal is to share the Visionary Network in order to gather public feedback, especially from our customers. We want to hear what they think about these new bus routes. We want to overall increase awareness of this specific element of Better Bus, specifically the redesign of the network. We want to make sure that we are offering clear information specifically about why we are engaging with members of the public and what we heard in the first phase of the project. And ultimately, and this is where we really need all of you, we want to build a bench of advocates and champions. We don't want this just to be the Better Bus team, those of us who have already been involved with the planning of the network. We want to make sure that all of you and everyone who sees the promise of this project goes out and champions it. So I'll talk a little bit about how we plan to engage the public. We have a very ambitious plan that is to host 50 events in 50 days to celebrate the 50th anniversary of MetroBus. As you can imagine, that's a lot of work, and we're really excited with the range of ways that we plan to engage with the public. We plan to reach a wide variety of our customers in a wide variety of ways at a wide variety of events. There will be a lot of different things, and I'll give a quick overview on this slide and then go into some more details on the subsequent slides. So you can find our teams wearing our blue Better Bus shirts all around our region, whether that's on buses, at pop-ups, at bus stops, on the internet at a webinar like this one or on social media. We are planning to partner with a lot of organizations that are really engaged with our customers. We plan to listen at workshops all across the region. In addition to capturing feedback through more standard means like surveys, we also plan to capture feedback we hear at our events through visual note-taking as a way to engage people even further. In this phase, we are engaging a lot more with our youngest customers and speaking with middle and high school students about their hopes and dreams for the network. And if you can't make it to any of these events, you can visit a brand new website that we're planning to launch to coincide with the launch of the phase two engagement next week, or you can call us on the phone. So hopefully what you take away from this is there are a lot of different ways that we want to interact with all of you and all of our bus customers in the course of this engagement effort. So I'll go into a little bit more detail first about some of the in-person and virtual events that we are offering and which we're branding as Better Bus Experience Live. And that comes out of a research effort about really just trying to make these as exciting as possible. So starting with our community workshops, of which there will be five, these workshops will be hosted in areas that will all see changes to bus service with a priority on meetings in those equity focus areas, or the EFCs as Metro calls them. There'll be a lot of different activities at these workshops. We really wanted to have a party atmosphere, so you can expect games and prizes, large interactive boards that have a lot of information about the new network, a station for kids so that parents can bring their kids, and there will be like designated babysitters there so parents can walk around and engage with us. The very first of the workshops, which we are branding specifically as our launch party, will be held at the ARC on Mississippi Avenue in Southeast DC. That's on Friday, April 21st from 3 to 7 p.m. We'd love to see all of you there if you're able to join us. We will be hosting about 15 different roadshow pop-ups. So these are like the workshop, but we want to take them on the road and meet customers where they are. So it's a slightly scaled down version of the workshop, but with a lot of the same theme. So activities, prizes, other things just to really keep people engaged. I really want to emphasize that at all of these events, we know sometimes people have just a minute for us and sometimes they can stay an hour. And so we've thought about all the different types of things that we want to have at these workshops and pop-ups with that range of sort of time of engagement in mind. You will perhaps run into us on the bus itself. We're planning on doing ride-alongs during the course of a bus route on a 26 or more different routes throughout the region. This is a way to connect with riders through an even further scaled down interaction with information that is custom to that specific route. So we'll make sure that our ambassadors have information about the you know, if you're on this given route right now, what might this route look like in the future in that proposed new bus network. We'll also be hosting webinars. We're going to host one for each of the three jurisdictions in our region. This is an opportunity for those who can't meet us at those in-person events. And we may possibly hold additional webinars with other organizations as well. Another opportunity to engage with us in real time, but not in person at a physical site, will be an Ask Me Anything event on Twitter. This is an opportunity to ask key questions where we will be able to just engage with you on social media. So this is a snapshot of those range of Better Bus Experience Live events that we are planning on hosting. On this slide, we have a map that shows the location of all of the live events. So in the red star at the bottom, that's where the ARC is located. The green triangles show the other workshops that we are hosting. And then the blue dialogue icons indicate where the other pop-ups are. So these events are across our region. 70% are in those equity focus communities, and 85% of the events are within a half mile of EFCs. So we've really tried to prioritize making sure we're speaking to some of the most disenfranchised populations in Finn, our region. Yes.
This is Carol Lopez. Just for those who can't see the map, could you just read out the locations on that map? Then?
Yes. Then actually, that's my next slide.
I'm sorry.
Okay. No worries at all, Carol. Thank you. I do appreciate that. And we're happy to share more information about, I'm going to read out the locations of all the workshops. I won't read the locations of the pop-ups right now, but that information will be on our website when it launches next week. So as I mentioned just a minute ago, the launch party is at The Arc in Southeast DC, and that's on Friday, April 21st from 3 to 7 p.m. Our next workshop will be at the West Hyattsville Library on Saturday, May 6th from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. Our third workshop will be at the Arlington Central Library on Wednesday, May 10th from 3 to 7 p.m. The fourth workshop will be at Turkey Thicket Rec Center. That's in Brooklyn in DC, and that'll be from Friday, May 19th from 3 to 7 p.m. And the final workshop, the fifth one, will be at the Creative Suitland Art Center in PG County. That is on Sunday, May 21st from noon to 3 p.m. So again, those are the five workshops. We're hosting another approximately 15 pop-up events, and I'm happy to answer specific questions about where those are when we get to the Q&A. But again, we'll share the more detailed list of those when the website goes live. I'm going to move on and talk a little bit about another category of our engagement efforts. So those were the live events. But of course, there are plenty of ways to experience the Visionary Network online. And I'll give a snapshot again of those tools right now and then go into detail on the next couple of slides. So one way to learn about this project and about the Visionary Network is a tool we're calling Envision Your Trip, and it's a way to compare your trip on the current network to the Visionary Network. You can enter your start and end points and see the routes in that proposed Visionary Network that might take you there. We'll have a tool where you can comment on your route, so you can leave route-specific feedback on an interactive comment map. We'll invite you to select the bus route maybe that you currently ride the most. You can go through and select every bus route if you're really interested. And we'll show you the proposed new routes that share some of the alignment of that route that you've selected. We'll have a set of resources in a map library. This is an atlas of maps of each route in the new Visionary Network, including route profiles. So that will be a way to get some more in-depth information, again, about each route. So a whole suite of tools here, and I'll give you a glance of what they look like on the next slide. And again, this will all be available by this new microsite that we're launching next week. So what information will we be sharing? I'll speak to each individual tool. So the one tool is a static network map. This is just very similar. It's just, you know, the regional bus map that you currently see if you're trying to look at a full regional map. Because this is an overview and the least specific tool that we have, I do want to clarify this. What this particular map will not be compatible with a screen reader. All the rest of our tools, though, are accessible. But just one tool here, the static network map. This is an example of one of the route profiles. So this is a document that lives in that map library that I just referenced. There's one of these for each of the proposed routes in the Visionary Network. It shows the alignment of that route, different points of interest that would be served by that route, similar existing routes, and information about the frequency and span of service, meaning when the bus will run. This route map will have alt text, which explains the termini that that are displayed in the map. And our team is working hard right now to ensure that the reading order of this PDF makes sense and conveys the clearest information for screen readers. Another piece another tool that we will be sharing is this interactive map. I'm sorry, it looks like that image is a little blurry to me right now. It will go live next week, and in this tool, users will be able to compare the existing routes again to the draft new routes in the Visionary network. This map is indeed compatible. It is indeed compatible with a screen reader and is capable of reading points of interest and other map labels. This is that trip planner that I was talking about, where you can compare trips you currently take and see what they would look like in the Visionary network, including the wait time between transfers. The trip planner sidebar interface is also compatible with the screen reader. So just to summarize some of the accessibility measures that we are ensuring in all of the tools that are going out as part of this engagement effort, the website, the route profiles, the trip planning tool, and the interactive map tool all work with screen readers. Our virtual tools have been tested for contrast and for readability. Nearly all of the materials and tools that we have will also be available in Spanish. I want to talk a little bit about how we're trying to reach a wide variety of people, because we want to hear from everyone. This is a big project and we need to hear from people. So to that end, we are offering information in 9 languages. So that's one way we hope to hear from everyone, whether, so that's one way. Another way is to prioritize locations that are accessible to people of color, to low-income people, and to people with disabilities. We're also hitting the airwaves and local papers to attract people who are most easily reached by advertisements through those means, as well as offering print and phone-based input options in addition to digital input options. You will see a lot of flyers, posters, yard signs, and screens across the metro system. Whether that's a digital screen in a metro station, whether it's a flyer on a bus, we want to make sure that we are reaching, most importantly, our current customers. And we have been testing our messages and our engagement tools early to ensure that they resonate and are intuitive to the diversity we see across our region, including people of various races, levels of education, and comfort level with digital tools. So some of the ways, the specific means by which we'll be getting the word out in the next 2 months, under the umbrella of print media, we will have signs at bus stops and major bus transfer facilities. We'll have take ones on buses. A take one is just a small card that has a little bit of information and directs you to a website that has more information. We will have door hangers in the areas around the locations of our workshops and in other intentionally selected areas to reach a diverse audience. We will be running multilingual ads as well as ads on Spanish radio stations. So, those ads that are in multiple languages will run in different news outlets, and then in addition, we will have ads on Spanish radio stations. Nearly all of our ads will be in English and Spanish, and then several more will be in many of our other languages. Other ways that we plan to get the word out under the digital realm include the monthly Better Bus Dispatch. That's our e-newsletter that currently has around 3,000 subscribers. There will be a very large social media effort So this includes paid ads that are geo-targeted to our equity focus communities, meant to drive virtual engagement and participation in our events. We'll also include advertising in apps and in other methods of digital media. So the image that just appeared on the screen is of a screenshot from Transit app, which is a real-time, it's an app that offers real-time information about the arrival of the next bus. And in this screenshot, which was from phase one, a flyer appears on the top of the screen that invites you to take our survey for a chance to win a smart trip card. So we will continue that as well. As I mentioned, we will have digital signage all around Metro stations. Even in Metro offices, we want to hear from Metro employees. And we will have some videos as well that may be running in Metro stations or on our website. So we have a really robust effort to make sure people know about this next phase of engagement. Let's speak a little bit to the various audiences that we want to engage to, excuse me, that we want to engage with. I want to emphasize some of the ways that we will be engaging with those other audiences. So we have already been speaking with Metro bus operators and other Metro employees. We want to really integrate our own employees' expertise. And so that's included, and you can, there is a photo here on the right that shows one of our preview parties, which is what we called our first look at the network that we did with some of our operators. So these have happened just over the last couple of weeks. And it's been great to speak with our folks who are on the front lines and know this bus map better than anyone else. So that's been really great to speak with our bus operators already. We're continuing to work with our partner jurisdictions and agencies through a variety of committee meetings and work sessions that happened both while we were planning the network and will continue through this phase. We are speaking with elected officials throughout the region through informative briefings. I talked earlier about how we really want to develop this bench of advocates and champions, and we want to make sure that we have our electeds on our side in that effort. And then we've continued to collaborate with community-based groups through the workshops that we plan to hold and pop-ups. We'll be hosting those with groups that we have been partnering with. We also have developed a collateral kit where we can basically hand out a set of all the digital or print tools that we've already made ourselves and just put them in the hands of one of our partners and say, here, you can go distribute this to your networks and reach the people who you already reach. So we're really excited about those efforts as well. So hopefully I've emphasized that over the course of the next two or so months, so that's from April 17th through June 5th, we are planning to reach as many different people as possible where they are, whether that's on a bus, whether it's at one of these party-like workshops, whether it's on the internet, and through a lot of different means of digital and print tools. So I'll move on a little bit now to next steps. We have some asks for all of you on this call. The first is that if you haven't already, we would love for you to sign up for our e-newsletter, the Better Bus Dispatch, at WMATA.com/betterbus. As I mentioned, that e-newsletter comes out monthly and contains all the important updates about the project. We want you to go and tell everyone who you know about this new bus network and why they should give us their input. It's really important, again, that we hear from as many different people as possible. And you can help spread the word through social media, through digital or print newsletters, or through posters. As I just mentioned, we're happy to give you a kit of information that you can share with your own networks. And then If you are free, we hope you will be able to attend one of the many events that we are hosting and invite others to come as well. I'm really excited for that launch party at the ARC on Friday, April 21st. There's just going to be a lot of excitement and buzz as we kick off this engagement effort. So if you are free then, I would love to see you there. And just to underscore this again, this presentation this afternoon was specifically about our engagement efforts. We will be coming back to you in May with detailed information about the Visionary Network itself and the technical processes that we use to build it. So I'm going to not take too many questions about the specifics of the network itself, since that will be the focus of our presentation next month. But please, if there are any specific questions that you have about the network, please feel free to chime in with those so we can prepare to address them over the course of the next month. So with that, we will turn to a discussion and a Q&A. Happy to answer any questions about these engagement efforts that I can.
Finn and Kim, this is Tino. The bus rail subcommittee has related projects. We're looking at the state of bus shelters in all the jurisdictions. Some are pretty horrible. Some are only a plastic chair provided by a neighbor. Some have no chairs at all or are crowded by shrubbery and make it impossible for wheelchairs. That's one. And then some of us have been involved with Montgomery County trying to get the county officials to approve the installation of accessible flashing pedestrian beacons. That is accessible pedestrian signals that have audio capabilities that pedestrians can use in order to cross the street or to be safe when they're trying to board a bus at a floating bus stop. So we're doing some things that are not directly involved in your activity, but are related. I have myself volunteered wearing one of your caps and one of your t-shirts at the Friendship Heights station bus terminal, and the 30 buses that serve that bus terminal go into Ward 7 and 8 as well as into Prince George's, where many low-income people live. I'm not sure that my solo activity trying to spread the word and even mentioning that you have these contests for $50 cards, I don't know if it did that much. Certainly it should do more at the ends, the other ends of the 30 bus lines, which go into Ward 7 and 8 and Prince George's County. There are many such terminals in those in Ward 7 and 8 and Prince George's County. Do you have an idea at the moment how many you're going to be covering with some of your activities?
Sure. I recall that we plan to host pop-ups at I believe at least three or four different metro stations in Ward 7, 8, and in Prince George's County. It's probably more than that. I'm just from a quick thought off the top of my head, I'd say at least four.
Stations that serve Metro Rail as well as Metro Bus?
Correct, yes. So we think that, one of the best ways to reach a high volume of customers is at these large metro stations that are critical transfer points for Metro Bus. it's just an easier way to get a lot of people as opposed to going to maybe one specific bus stop that is on the street and is not linked to a metro rail station. So all of those pop-ups will be at metro rail stations, which we already know to be high ridership stations, both for rail and for bus. And then in terms of the workshops, both of our Maryland workshops are hosted in PG County. So there's that one in West Hyattsville and there's one in Suitland. And even the launch party that's at the ARC is right on the border, right between Ward 8 and Prince George's County. So so we expect, of course, to receive a whole host of people who perhaps live in Prince George's County and come into DC for that event.
And if I could really quickly add, just in response to your question, Tino, we're also, as Finn mentioned, doing several bus ride-alongs, and several of those are actually going to be in Ward 7 and 8, and then also in Prince George's. And then something new that we're doing in this round, kind of to your point about the fact that spreading the word about these events is really challenging, is at least for the workshops, we're both handing out flyers at businesses and major community locations within a mile of the location of the workshop. And then we're also putting door hangers on doors within a half mile of the workshop location. So we're doing a little bit more this round to really try to, on the ground, spread the word about these different events, many of which are in Ward 7 and 8 and in Prince George's.
Are you going to be able to cover some of the large Black churches and the Latino churches? The Latino churches are very separate.
Yes, we will be. Those are already on the list of where to go with flyers to spread the word. So that's the plan.
On Sundays?
I think so. That's a great question. I'll need to follow up about the logistics, because we want to do it within the time frame of the workshop happening soon, but it may be that it has to be a week early if it is for a church. So great point. I'll follow up about the exact date for those.
The churchgoers are there on Sundays.
Yep.
Okay. Let's see, Anu, are there questioners lined up?
Yes, Chair Calabria, we have two members with their hands up, Doris Ray and then Pat Sheehan. So Doris, when you start speaking, I'll turn the timer of 3 minutes at that point.
Doris?
Hi, I just had to unmute. I'm looking forward to being at the meeting tomorrow, one way or the other, and hearing more about the outreach. So I'm curious, in the outreach, will you be able to be telling Metro bus riders and prospective riders, for example, here in Northern Virginia, would you be able to tell me how I can get from my house in the Seven Corners area to Fair Oaks, as well as my county government center just outside of Fair Oaks, with two buses rather than three or four, because I think that's what the rider is going to be looking for. So I'm wondering, is the bus network at this point complete that we're going out and doing outreach about, or is there more to come in actually the construction, so that people of the network and construction in quotes, so that, you know, we won't have to be taking three or more buses to get someplace with more than a half an hour wait between the buses. You know, those are the things that will improve the network from my perspective as a rider. And then from the disability perspective, I think it's important to be able to bring this information to meetings regular meetings of disability organizations, you know, like the American Council of the Blind, the NFB, the meetings of deaf and hard of hearing groups at the Northern Virginia Resource Center for Deaf and Hard of Hearing Persons and places like that, where there are going to be dedicated riders of the system. So those are my questions.
Anu, could you put on the gallery so we can see speakers?
I'm sorry?
The gallery, you know, the at the moment you have this blue screen saying discussion.
Okay.
And, thank you. Thank you.
Doris, thank you so much for those questions. I can speak to your first question first about whether this is the, you know, final network. It's not, and that's why we want to go out to the public and get all of your feedback. But I do want to I want to clarify that it is a complete draft. So that in theory, if every single comment we get is it's perfect, don't change it, then this is the draft we would plan to implement. So of course we know it's not going to be like that, and that's why we need your comments. But this is in theory a full version of what the bus network could be. So I certainly hope that when you come to our events and you give us your home address and a destination that you frequently go to, what you'll be able to see in that network is a journey that doesn't take three or four buses, but maybe can be accomplished in two. That was definitely one of the goals of this effort. So I hope you see that. I don't know if Melissa can speak more to your second question.
Sure, I'm happy to take the second question. I think, Doris, you're right. We absolutely need to be going out and sharing with different groups in the community. I think we can continue to work with you and others on this group to identify the best places to go. I think we're trying to strike a balance between we'd love for people to come to the events that we have planned as possible, but we know it's not an option for everyone. So we do definitely want to accommodate coming to different meetings. And I know we've worked with you to try to coordinate a meeting with the Independence Center of Northern Virginia. So that's the type of thing that we really want to continue to do. So if you'd like to pass along the name of some organizations, I know you'll be at the Community Connections Committee meeting. That's one of our community group meetings, community group liaisons that's involved in the Better Bus Network redesign. So we can chat more then, and I can write down some names of groups that you'd suggest we reach out to do more kind of in-depth meetings with. Because that's the type of thing, again, we do have limited resources, but we absolutely want to try to accommodate as much as we can. So we'll continue that conversation, and I'll open that up to everyone else. If you do have organizations you'd like to suggest that we engage with, feel free to, I think Anu has my contact information, or you can reach out to her and she can pass it along.
Sure. And I'll be happy to share any information that we receive, Melissa. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Sure. And thanks for the questions, Doris.
Patrick.
Thank you, Tino. A couple of things. Tino, just for your information, there is a, on the floating bus stop situation in Montgomery County this weekend, they're taking a look at some prototype communication just at these floating bus stops, very identical to what you said, so they could get feedback from visually impaired folks. So within the Better Bus Network, if you're looking for designs that will provide more accessible floating buses where you have bicycle protected bike lanes, Matt Johnson would be the guy in Montgomery County who is heading this, and we can learn an awful lot from him. I bring that up because we don't want to have one design in, let's say, Montgomery County, another design in Prince George's County, something different in the district, and then in Virginia. It would be great if we could agree on something regionally, and they have been. Montgomery County has been working on this for quite some time, so a good resource so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. And Tino, just so you know, there's, you know, progress is being made, so that's really good. Secondly, thank you very much for the work that you're doing on testing your tools to make sure that they're accessible. I appreciate that. I think that's great to be able to work in all of those environments that you discussed. And, you know, it's great when people are testing the tools that we depend on. And then lastly, on the FAIR calculator, which has always been somewhat of an interest, I know we have a lot of construction going on, you know, at different points of the year, that the FAIR calculator is updated fairly often or to reflect the changes in what's available as far as bus and rail and all of that stuff. How often is the FAIR calculator updated? I've heard stories. I don't know if that's a fair question to ask you or whether you have an answer.
Let me chime in again, Patrick, as yeah. We've talked about before. When we're talking about the FAIR calculator is updated for regular service. But as you know,
I don't have a problem with that. Yep.
But the Metro Access service area and service hours are extended beyond regular fixed route service.
Right. I didn't bring up Metro Access. I just was asking about the FAIR calculator in its standard configuration for bus and rail. That's all. Yeah.
Well, okay. So in that case, what you're asking them about, because they don't use the FAIR calculator. That's Metro Access. You're talking about the trip plan.
Yes. Trip plan. Sorry about that.
No
problem. Yeah. No. Not FAIR calculator. Yeah. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. I'm looking at the trip planner, which you said you have tested with all of those accessibility platforms, which I appreciate. And with the construction that is out there for the trip planner, how often is that updated? Is that a fair question? I don't know if you know the answer to that.
I can really quickly take that one. So
okay.
Because this is a visionary bus network, this is not, we're going to be working towards a kind of a shorter term bus network that is a step towards this visionary network. But the network that we're going out to the public with in, I guess, a week is going to be one that we would need additional funding for and additional resources for. So it would be implemented in the future, in a year that, again, when we get those resources. And so the trip planner is including that visionary network. And so it is really looking towards the future for what your trip would become when that network is implemented. So it's kind of this point in time comparison between what current service you would have versus what you would have in this new visionary network. So it's not going to be updated regularly with any construction changes or anything along those lines, because it's going to be this kind of point in time view into what the network could be. And it's really intended to give you an idea of, for whatever trips you're making more frequently, what it would look like in the visionary network compared to now.
See what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a comparison between the current state of where we are now versus what we'll have later. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Good. Okay. And Mr. Blake, thank you for correcting me. I'm sorry. You and I did have that discussion about FAIR calculators versus trip planners.
No problem, sir. Thank you.
Not a problem. Good. No. You were completely right on that one. I misspoke. Thank you very much for that answer, and thanks for the work you're doing. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the question.
Next, and then Sandy.
Chair Calabia, this is Anu. Because it's 5:49 at this point, and our public comments were supposed to begin at 5:45, I believe we do have a member of the public. I just want to very quickly make sure that there's only one member who wants to make public comment. If there are any members of the public who are intending to make public comments, please tell us now.
Let them ask.
Yes, and Maya Flores is the one who wanted to make public comments.
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Sure. So at this point, Chair Calabia, if you would, we can go ahead and take Ms. Forrest's public comments, and then with the remaining time, we can come back to the current discussion.
Yes, please. Maya.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Marian Flores, my nickname Maya. Yes, and I wanted to comment that I was on the bus, on the 16H bus here in Arlington, Virginia on Tuesday. I boarded the bus at the, Penrose, I think it's the South Barton Street. And then I went up to Dinwiddie. The bus did not stop right at the shelter. It stopped before the shelter because the 16G, I think it was in front of it and was unloading people. So the bus driver stopped before the shelter, let everybody out, all the people who can walk, let them out. They got out the back door. And then he proceeded to let the ramp down so that I could get off the bus. Well, I went to get off the bus and the ramp was not on the sidewalk correctly. It was not flush with the sidewalk. Part of it was, and part of it was in air. And that proceeded to flip my chair over to the right. I flipped out of the chair, slammed into the sidewalk, have injuries, as you can see, all down the right side of my face. And a bruise right now has come down to the jaw, but this started all up here. My eyes are all, with, you know, bruises and so on. It started from the right eye and then went into the left. I have been not being able to go out on the street, really. I mean, today I went out to a doctor's appointment and that was it, so that they could do a follow-up. This is really awful. And I did have to go to the emergency room to see if there was a CT scan performed, to see if there was any anything broken. Fortunately, it wasn't, but it could have been worse. And I landed on my arm, on my right arm. I thought I broke it. I mean, thank goodness the bus driver called 911 so that they could, you know, bring the ambulance over and so on. It was just a horrible thing. And please, the other thing was that I wasn't, the bus driver just did not use the tie downs in the bus, which is something else that probably would have just, I don't know, assisted in kind of slowing them down and having the 16G unload its people and then having us move forward. Something needs to do, I would think, with training. They need to train the bus drivers further to just stop at the right place where the bus, where the ramp isn't all over the place so that these things don't happen. This is just horrible. And I've already put my comment in to the customer service and I do have the number and I'm waiting for them to get back to me.
But my, yeah. Also an ombudsman person. Barbara, is there something that you can help out with? Or Carol?
We will follow. Ms. Flores, I'm so sorry this happened to you. Our office will follow up with you. Could you give a new phone number where we can reach you?
Earlier, I responded to an email from Ms. Ray. Doris Ray forwarded this information to my attention.
And
I provided information for Ms. Flores to submit a claim to Metro to begin the claims process. And I've also forwarded the information to the Senior Vice President of Bus so he can do a service investigation and address the training shortcomings that Ms. Flores has articulated. So we'll be following up on the operations side, and we've given Ms. Flores the information to begin a claims process.
And I have put in a claim. In fact, I put it in on Thursday night. And okay. Yeah.
Thanks, Maya. Steve, since you're a member of the Better Bus and will be meeting tomorrow with them, can we forego your question and go to Sandy? Sandy?
Absolutely. Thanks, Tina.
Hi, this is Sandy. Just a quick comment in the outreach about the Visionary Bus Network. Surely you're putting flyers in libraries in the various jurisdictions?
Yeah, we have we're putting flyers, I think right now the plan is to put flyers typically that are within the vicinity of these different pop-ups. I don't know how far out of a radius we're doing, but I think it's something around a mile. Finn, you can jump in if you have additional information, but that is something we can consider.
Maybe I used the wrong word, maybe not flyers, but your simple one pager that leads you to more information.
Got it. Yeah, we are sharing those more widely and making sure we're working with community partners, community-based organizations, and others, libraries, to get that information out so that they can be handed out if people are interested. But that's a great point. I'll follow up to confirm the types. Again, with limited resources, we can't put them anywhere, but libraries are absolutely important places to make sure that those live.
Okay.
So thank you. Appreciate it.
Finn? Oh, I'm sorry. Duan?
Yes, I do. Just a quick follow-up to Sandy's statement there. I am also the president of the Friends Group for the Center of Accessibility at MLK Library, right there in the heart of the city. And I believe, not speaking out of turn, that we can also work with Center for Accessibility staff to make that available, or some of that material available in Braille for patrons who are blind as well.
Thank you very much for that offer. Anu, is it possible to get to Juan's information to follow up separately, because we'd absolutely like to take advantage of that.
I would be happy to share that offer. Sure.
Thank you. And thank you for the offer.
Mm-hmm. Are there members with questions? Or
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. Rico just raised his hand. Rico, go ahead.
Okay, can you see me?
Yes.
Okay, my question is, for the wheelchair on the buses or the train, are the operators going to do how to make sure they buckle the seatbelts for the wheelchair for this to not to happen to any other passengers on the bus? Because I do see this stuff when I ride the H2, the B2, which is on the buses, and the operator do not put the, make sure they hook them tight before they go on. So can we make sure that operators are following the policies and put in the make sure the wheelchair are safe for this not to happen to another citizen?
Carol, could you respond to that, please?
Yes, the operators are to ask customers if they wish to be buckled on them, secured. If a customer does not wish to be secured, that customer is not secured.
Okay, we have only one more minute. Any last suggestions for Finn or Melissa?
Tino?
Yes, Doris.
Yes, I just wanted to, number one, thank Mr. Blake and Anu and all the rest of the staff for their assistance with Ms. Forrest's complaint and with the issue of the injuries she sustained and everything. And I think that we need to take a serious look at both driver training in general about using the lifts and where to use them, but also just the idea of when drivers are in rush hour or in situations that are crowded and Columbia Pike is a very crowded corridor, and it's like 16th Street Northwest going up to Silver Spring, and bus after bus coming up to a stop, and drivers get very anxious about keeping their schedules and such, and make mistakes like this that will cause people with disabilities to get injured, or any patron potentially to get injured. And I think we also need to maybe take a look as WMATA and as this committee into the circumstances of how and where those low floor ramps can be used safely, because it sounds to me, and I know the intersection where she had the accident, it sounds to me like the driver was probably in a rush and ignored, coming up and making sure the ramp was down and such. But I think we need to also look at the whether the ramp is adequate, because this could have happened to almost anybody, even somebody who's blind and a cane user like me, if they had put us out where the ramp was off alignment, it could have happened to anybody. So thank
Doris,
you.
Thank for you. Me say that. By contract with the sign languages, the ASL interpreters, we are over the contract time. So I have to thank Melissa and Ben. Three of us will see you tomorrow morning. And thank you for coming this afternoon. This is adjourned.
Thank you so much for having us.
Danil, could you give me your telephone number, please?